You have arrived at Laugh Box, the podcast for the Association of Applied and Therapeutic Humor. We are so excited you're here. Join us for episode 122 with Jim Bob Williams, Katie B, and special guest Richard Hawk of Make Safety Fun. Yay!
Welcome to Laugh Box, the official podcast of the Association for Applied and Therapeutic Humor. I'm Jim Bob Williams.
And I'm Katie B.
And our guest today is Richard Hawk, a world-renowned expert on making safety fun. Let's join him.
Yay! Hi! Yay!
All right. Well, hold on.
Yeah.
All right. This week, I'll start my podcast, Safety Stuff, which Jim Bob is like, say, it's similar to the e-zine I had, which was very successful. I had like 20,000 regular subscribers to it at one time. It's going to be the same thing as Safety Stuff in this sense. It's mostly 70% going to be fun, unusual ideas that either I've come up with or people from around the world have come up with on how they make their safety program or their safety meetings and fun and interesting. I have hundreds, literally, and one of my books is 250 super bright safety meeting and promotion ideas. And that's just an older one. I have probably another 300-400 ideas, not my ideas only, but people all around the world. My first episode will be, if you're going to launch a safety program, let's say you're going to have a new housekeeping campaign or something that has to do with confined space, what are things you can do that make it fun, engaging? How can you get your employees involved? And then I go through a quick list, like 10, 11 of them, but quickly. And then I'll make this like, we'll develop a process by which we consider how we can continue on our ability to, no. You know, one, have a cool logo or have a cool mascot like Geico has with their Gecko, you know, and then do this. Here's what this group has done with Back to the Future, with back safety. And then I'll have more fun stuff, tidbits, jokes, and at the end, I have, you didn't see this coming, which is like a really unusual, strange, fanatically crazy safety and health thing that's going on that I picked up over the last couple of weeks. If you just go to makesafetyfun.com, you'll see where there'll be a sign up for the RS feed, you know, for the podcast. The hardest part of my career as far as becoming successful has been that in the safety field, particularly, everybody takes it seriously, as we should, of course. But that doesn't mean it has to be, you know, stern, reserved, and boring. It doesn't. The fact, because it is so serious, is all the more reason we should do things to engage the folks that we are either training, we're, you know, the safety coordinator on the site, or whatever. And you could do that. By the way, you could do that with discipline. Well, I don't like to say discipline. Counseling and coaching, right? Is that what everybody always says?
Yeah.
In other words, when somebody is screwed up and you have to tell them about it, you could still make that fun and enjoyable.
Yeah.
I mean, actually fun. Let me give you a good example, one of my favorite. I was working at a power plant, and this woman, Tina, who was a friend of mine too, but she was a mechanic, and I'm way up top in the turbine deck, way up on a catwalk. And I'm looking down and she's sawing a piece of metal without gloves on. She has a hacksaw and she's like cutting off the burrs on it. Now she's supposed to have gloves and she had her gloves right there, but she wasn't wearing them. Well, I was thinking, well, maybe I should go down and talk to her and tease her and tell her, you know, don't do that type thing. But I didn't think I'd get there in time. So I said, I got to do something else. So I went back to my office, and by then it was lunch. So that was another reason I didn't come down, because it would take a little while to get there, by the way. I had to go through another building, back through into the turbine deck, that kind of thing. So I had a little rubber, bloody rubber finger with, amongst all my different props. I wrote her a poem, Tina, her name was, I remember that, this was years ago, about how lovely her hands are, how important they are, how she should take care of them. And I put that bloody finger in the company mail that at that time and sent it to her. Well, the next time I went into the shop, at the maintenance shop, and she saw me, she comes over, she gives me a hug. And she goes, Hawk. Everybody calls me Hawk usually. She goes, Hawk. She goes, I couldn't figure out what that was. She goes, that's so funny. And she even had it up on her locker. Everybody in the maintenance shop knew about it. It's a pretty big maintenance shop, maybe like 80 people or so. And everybody knew about it. But she was counseled or coached, whichever one you want to use. I even said to her, what does this all mean, Tina? It doesn't mean I wanted to be funny. She goes, I know, Hawk. I promise from now on, I will make sure that I wear my gloves, which is the main purpose, right? As a safety professional, one of the things that are like top of my list is to engage employees so that they improve their behavior, or at least maintain, if they have a good behavior in a certain area, that behavior. And no better way to do it than to make it fun, energetic, and enjoyable. You can't always do that.
Yeah.
I've been involved with fatalities, and that's a different world, right?
Yeah.
You can't clown around. Though I have seen times where, as you and I know from being humans, during grieving situations, there's some humor that sometimes comes in. Like you'll say, oh, if Bobby was here, boy, would he think this was crazy or funny, or Bobby would probably, you know what I'm saying? It's like there is that kind of humor, but not one where you write a poem and clown around. But most of the time, yes, especially with your safety training and safety meetings, you can make them so much more fun and interesting than I see. You know, something that breaks my heart, I still see when I go to conventions, like the National Safety Council or ASSP, I'll walk around and when I'm not speaking or, you know, have free time, and I'll look at other people's rooms and how they're presenting. And I'm not doing it just to judge, and I'm not going to say anything to them, just to see. And some are excellent, wonderful. I could see that they're engaging and that they, you know, the people are, it's bright, that the slides aren't what matter. But too often, more than not, lights are low, slides have a bunch of text on them, person up front is saying, well, we'll develop a process by which we consider how important it is that you go home the same way you came to work, and we'll increase our ability to establish incentives that involve methodologies that, right? And that's why safety has a bad reputation for being boring. Now, the stuff that you guys are doing is wonderful, because it's certainly, this doesn't just apply to safety, and it doesn't just apply to having training and things that have to do with your work. Every part of our life, if we can add humor to it when it's respectable, when it's appropriate, it just makes life better. It's like, it's one of the greatest gifts that we have, is our ability to laugh and have fun all the time. When I say all the time, I don't mean a ridiculous amount, right? But pretty much most of the time. Even when I go food shopping, I always have finger puppets with me. And my favorite finger puppets, which my wife got me as a gift, are these. These are, as you could see, I'm sure the listeners will be
able to see. Oh, they're wonderful. The Three Stooges.
The Three Stooges finger puppet. Yeah, they would cost a little bit. And my wife got them for me as a gift. And I always carry around finger puppets and give them out at different times when it's appropriate. But as I started this conversation about one thing that's been a problem with my career, is so many folks, often that are in the upper tier of leadership and management, think that this is silliness that it's not helpful. They won't learn. And they're wrong. They're 100% incorrect by things that have been studied. You know better than I do, actually, how much humor helps in almost every situation, including your health. Now, including the fact that if you have some serious illness, being upset, morose, down is going to make it worse, right? It's not going to make it better. Whereas if you're, you know, like Patch Adams, right, type thing, where if people are upbilled and happy, well, your immune system will be boosted, all kinds of things. And the same thing
goes.
This
has been known since antiquity, right? Proverbs 1722, merry heart does good like a medicine.
It's funny. I enjoy reading about the Stoic philosophers, and the word Stoic has become to mean real stern and reserved, which is a misnomer. The ones like Marcus Aurelius and all those guys, they were funny too. They saw humor in life too. No matter how far back you go in history, humor is one of the things that not just distinguishes us, because many animals that are more intelligent do have humor, not exactly the same as we do, but it definitely has a positive impact on learning. I have more examples than we ever even begin to have time with.
But let me ask you a question. You're a trailblazer in the idea of taking a very serious topic, safety training, and making it fun. Okay, you're a motivational safety speaker, and most people, their memories of motivational safety speeches may have been when they got chewed out by their boss for failing to wear their hard hat or something. So when did you discover that fun was a superpower in making your message more effective?
Oh, well, I don't think I've ever been asked that specific question, Jim Bob. I know the answer, though. I started out in theater. I wrote a play for our high school. Yeah, which was an amazing thing. They put the play I wrote called Joe about a minor bird that could predict the future. They put that on in our high school for a play. And then I got a scholarship to go to Emerson, Boston, a theater college. And I toured with an acting company. And I, once again, had a great lucky break. I had a play, a musical I wrote about self-esteem for children got produced. And I toured with that acting company for a while. Then I taught guitar for a bit. And my wife, I got married and I was teaching guitar and my wife got pregnant, still looking for the person responsible for that. And and so I had to get a regular job. And so I got a job at a nuclear power plant. One of my students, his father was the radiation protection manager. Well, I worked first as a technician, safety technician, radiation protection technician. And then a job came opening for training, access training, when people first come into the plant. And I got that job. And I think because of my theater background, they figured when I first went there and started training, all I did was what everybody else did. And then that case, just to show that I'm older than 2000, is we had overheads. Do you remember them, Jim Bob?
Oh, yes.
Yes. It was plastic. There was no slides. There was no computers, right?
Yeah.
Oh, my word. I just did like everybody else. I put up the slides, bullet points and all that. Well, a woman, there was a friend of mine, Barbie Walton, who hung out with me at the plant when I was a technician. She actually was on my crew. And I clowned around all the time. I was such a, you know, card and made tell jokes and did all kinds of stuff. And I was funny and fun. She sat through one of my sessions and she came up to me afterwards. She goes, "Hawk, that was horrible." She goes, "I thought this was going to be great because you were doing it. I thought this was going to be fun and we would laugh a lot." She goes, "That stunk. That was horrible." You're right. I'm just trying to do what everybody else does. And Jim Bob, from that moment on, and Katie, I tell you, I never again ever did a session or did stuff where it was simply, "I'll develop a process by I was Richard Hawk. I made it so that it was fun." I was always concerned about making sure that I covered what material was required, that the class understood, you know, because some of this was rather technical, radioactivity, you know, and radiation. That is paramount. But I was going to do it in a fun way. So that was the moment when a friend of mine told me that what I did was horrible. Huh. Was when I realized, oh, my word. And I was doing safety training. So that was it. That was the moment.
Well, thank her someday.
Yes.
Yeah, that's an amazing story. Yeah.
Yeah.
How you got there. Yeah.
Yeah. I think if nobody would have came up and said that, maybe I would have eventually transitioned into it, but not in such an aha dramatic way. I have had it's cost me work because folks think, "Oh, sure, we'll play games. We'll just have play." And play is not the same as fun. Fun also means energetic enjoyment. You enjoy what you're doing and there's a lot of energy involved in it. Yeah. That's what fun is. Laughter is fun, of course. And if you can include laughter, great. Laughter is probably one of the pinnacles of positive feelings and emotions. And it helps you remember. That's another thing. When you're having fun, when you are emotional, it helps you remember. And unusual stuff, too. I used to give out cockroaches. One of my talks was cockroaches and ice cream. I give everybody cockroach, even if it was like 500 people in the audience, because I'd buy them by the case, these little plastic cockroaches. They weren't that expensive then. I don't know what they are now. And I used cockroaches as an example for what we don't like. And then if the session was about hazards, I talk about hazards as cockroaches. This is a huge cockroach. You know, this is a hissing cockroach from South America. And I used ice cream as an example for something good. Well, people would see me years later, 10 years later. They'd say, "Oh, I saw you when you were in New Orleans or someplace." I said, "Yeah, well, what was my talk about?" They say, "Oh, it was about cockroaches." He says, "I remember that."
Right? Always remember the bit.
Right. But sometimes I said, well, what were the cockroaches about? And they say, oh, it was about how you're not supposed to drone when you're talking. Because I would also use it for safety professionals to teach them how to, you know, do better presentations and give better classes or training or meetings. So the thing that it's hurt my career is that people think that. But you know, both of you, Katie and Jim, know that the opposite is true. That when you deal, when you include fun, energetic enjoyment, and humor, it's never, unless it's inappropriate, bad. It's never. It's always good if it's tied into what you're trying to accomplish.
So how did you go from this one nuclear power plant doing one set of training, and, you know, when did you realize you had something that you could take on the road?
Oh, okay. Very specific story with this. I liked it where I worked. And when I left, I was actually not a train. Oh, I did do a lot of training, though. But I became a safety coordinator. I was in like the, you know, manager of one of the power plants, Hope Creek. And I would assign each department, I would give them, you know, tell them they had to do a safety meeting each month. There's like 7 or 8 departments, I think, that were in the field, you know, like the instrument calibration, maintenance, you get the idea, operation. So they had to do one a month, and a lot of the departments would rotate. They'd pick people who were going to do it. And this one fellow, Jim, who was in the instrument and control department, it was his turn that month to give a safety meeting. And he went to his supervisor, his boss, his senior supervisor, and to me. And he said, fire me if you want. I will not do it. He says, he was petrified to get in front of the audience. He said, I won't do it. Right? Now, I could have done it for him and got him out of it, but I knew if I did that, I'd be doing all the safety meetings for every department.
Yeah.
So I don't know how I came up with the idea, but I said, you know what, why don't I give him a pat, make something up for him so he doesn't actually have to get up and talk in front of the audience. And I went to his supervisor. I said, would you be willing to at least, you know, introduce this subject and then have them do? And I remember it was confined space, and the handout that everybody had a coffin on it, because a coffin is a confined space, right? And so I designed this thing, which I ended up calling them duplicating packages, where you could make these, and they all of them had everything you needed to say fun-wise and unusual activities. And I had 24 of them, 24 different topics with titles like Another Pain in the Office, 101 Ways to Keep the Weasel Out of Your Hen House, that was about hazard, and The Confined Space, which I kept that title because the cover of it was just cool. A casket, not the caskets are cool, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And so I said, you know what? I could sell these. So I made them up, sold them. It was $120 a year. You got 12 packages. And then I also started a newsletter called How to Educate and Influence. That's back. Remember that day when you had a newsletter that you would get in the mail?
Like, yeah, there were
6 pages with an insert with puzzles and stuff. And I did that for 6 years. Oh, I had to write constantly. That's how it happened. That's how I switched to that. Then I started consulting and then speaking, and, you know, how life goes. Just the path went this way and that way. But that was that guy, Jim, who wouldn't do a safety. He said, you could fire me. He was petrified of getting in front of people. Nicest guy. And one-on-one, he was fine. But as I've seen, because I've given classes on this, there's people who are terrified of it, you know, to the point where they actually almost pass out if they have to get up in front of somebody. He was one of those people. But if I, once again, like Barbara, if I see him, Katie, I got to thank him for being so frightened about getting in front.
I was going to ask you to talk about play a bit, because I think there is a place for it. Of course, with safety and play, then it gets to be a bit of a thin line. But how do you...
It depends on what it is. With training or meetings, you can do a lot of playing. I just have this rule for myself when I do training or like that: the play must teach, even if it's outlandishly fun. I did this one. Couple companies have asked me to come in and help them with their annual training. And one thing I'm very proud of, this was so much fun. And I'm hoping more companies want me to do this. I've kind of not promoted any. I'm going to start. It was about ergonomics. I had done this for a different thing. It's a skit. And you don't need to memorize anything. So you could bring people in 20 minutes before the class and still do this skit. It's called the Tale of Ergonopolis, and it takes place back in ancient Greece when they're having the Olympics. And the characters are Helen of Trauma, and she has a script which she reads, and there's two artisans, two characters behind her. One is Stan Straticus, who does everything correctly, you know, so you should sit correctly, you should make sure you're hydrated, all the different things for ergonomics that you should do, and he does it. And then on the other side is Hercernes, and Hercernes does everything he shouldn't do, including stuff health-wise, like smoke, you know, and he doesn't sit up straight and eats poorly, you know, all that. And it's hilarious. Even if you don't have folks who are funny, you don't need to be, just pantomime what Helen of Trauma is saying. Well, when you're done watching that skit, you take a test. And now I like to break people up into teams when they're there, and then the teams compete. And that's what they do in these companies that have, you know, used this. And the test is not simple, because the skit has some technical, some man-machine interface stuff, what ergonomics means. You get the idea. Like, it's a learning experience that's hilarious. See, that's like the perfect mix of play and learning. Can you just play as icebreakers? Sure, of course, no harm in it whatsoever. But if I do icebreakers, the icebreaker ties into the topic somehow. And so, yeah. Can you overdo play? Absolutely. If you play so much that they don't learn, that they don't remember or realize the topic at hand, then the play was detrimental. It wasn't a good thing to do. But if it adds energy, doesn't distract from the topic, or encourages, pushes the topic, then it's wonderful. It's great. It's the best thing you can possibly do. And I also always recommend that you have winners with prizes. I don't know. I just find that is more stimulating, because adults will go to great extremes to win a stupid pulling pickle.
Don't go away. We're just stopping for a station break. Stay with us. Have a giggle. And we'll be right back.
Are you tired of the same lame speakers coming to your organization and making people fall asleep over coffee? What you need is a presentation on therapeutic humor. And Katie B and I just happen to know two excellent presenters. You could have Katie B. You could have Jim Bob. You could have us both. And we'll talk to your organization about the application of humor and how to make your life better. And that's going to be a whole lot better than watching people fall asleep in their coffee. So, take down this number. 7. Just wanted you to have it. And then take down this number. 304-610-7970. Call us today. Operators are standing by. Some of them are standing on their heads. It's amazing. You've got people from all walks of life at AADH. You have neurologists, neuroscientists, psychiatrists, psychologists, MDs, LPNs, RNs, social workers, retired engineers.
And don't forget clowns.
I'm not forgetting clowns. I saved the best for last.
And now, back to our Laugh Box podcast.
Now you see a lot of ads for people that are trying to do gamification of learning. Because that's just, it's just the science supports that when people are having fun or they have a challenge,
I think that's a great, it's absolutely great. As long as you don't take it to extremes, it's wonderful. Yeah. And learning theory, any that you read, adult learning theory, is more difficult than children's learning. Though not always, right? I'm just saying in this one area, adults are jaded in a sense. They already know things about the world, and they comfort and not being bored and all that becomes, you know, really important. Kids are easily, especially small or kindergarten, first, second grade. I used to be in children's theater, so I know they buy into everything pretty much. You know, they buy right into it. Adults, you got to do a little more and do a little different and realize that their psyche is at a different level. That's why it's just games, just play, just constant fun in a learning situation or in a situation in the field Now, I, when I was at that demolition place, I did a lot of playful, fun things at a nuclear power plant. Trust me, there's, besides maybe NASA, and I've done work with NASA, by the way, so I have an insight into it. There's no place I've been to that has more rules and strict, specific things that you have to do. We had two NRC inspectors on our site, the federal government on our site, all the time. It'd be like having two OSHA inspectors on your project all the time. And yet, I not only got away with it, it was good. I get a good reputation. I played all the time, but not when it was, when I'm frisking somebody or we're going into a high radiation area. I'm not like, hey, let's skip in here. I don't do that, right? But, you know, at times I did do stuff that was, I used to, outside of what's called the RCA, I always have harmonicas, and sometimes if somebody was sad because, like, oh, I got to work overtime, I'd say, hold on. I pull out my harmonica and play it for them. You know, stuff like that. That's very appropriate. Best job sites that both of you have been on, or jobs that you've worked, whatever that may be, whether it's in an office or in a construction site, when you have fun with your fellow coworkers and colleagues, that's probably the most important thing as you enjoying your job.
Yeah, that is a leading indicator of actually, to me, a leading indicator of productivity, of safety, is the morale of the work group. If I see people and they're playfully teasing with each other and silly things are posted on the wall, I know, okay, these people are talking with each other. This is probably going to be a good, back in the days when I did audits, this is going to be a good audit. Okay. If it looked like it was the inside of Leavenworth, all the bare walls and everybody grimacing in pain.
Oh, my word, yes.
It's like, you know,
how does Homer Simpson play into your safety stuff? Did he at all? I mean,
you go to a therapist because you've had trauma in your life. You know how that happens, right? I was, when Homer Simpson came out, this is a power plant where everybody knew me. Everybody, there was probably, when we weren't in an outage, in other words, refueling, 600 plus people there, right? Maybe more. Homer came out. He was the safety guy at a nuclear power plant. Here I am. And I clown around, like, as you can tell, like crazy with people, making fun of everybody in a lighthearted way, you know, kind-hearted. I started to be called Homer by everybody.
Did not see that coming.
Oh my goodness. Well, as we all know, having worked in the field, what do you not do when something like that happens? You don't act like it bothers you, even if it does. No. I went along with it. I even was going, duh. I was acting like Homer at times. And gradually it faded away. And then I got back to Hawk. And I didn't, you know, I never brought it up unless somebody brought it up. But there you go, Katie.
I know. Here, I was thinking that you used him as an example in some of your training. I certainly did not expect
Never once did I use him in any of my training, nor did his name leave my lips once I left the house.
See, I probably avoided a lawsuit with Fox.
My job, too. Right? Yeah, that was very funny.
Question. Okay, are you entirely self-taught, or did you have any mentors or heroes in the, you know, in the field of making it making instruction fun?
Well, I certainly did when my theater days, you know, my theater years, but that wasn't so much to make it fun, was your ability to, you know, write, be expressive and, you know, musicals and have fun, you know, parts I played. I usually played like the comedic part in plays, like in South Pacific, I was Luther Billis, who was the guy who, you know, was a fun guy, the guy who played my favorite Martian in the movie. So I had that in me, you know, since I was been a child, you know, 7, 8 years old, I was doing goofy stuff and in theater even. So that was there. Avid reader, like crazy. It's my favorite thing to do is to read, like, and all kinds of stuff. And also, for a while, mostly my quote science stuff I read was about how to, you know, being creative, how to make things more fun. And I would also watch, and I still do, to learn, you know, comedians or funny folks. And now I use TikTok and I watch people who are funny and see what do they do to be fun, enjoyably and energetic and interesting and funny. What do they do to be humorous? And so, yeah, I can't come up with, as all of us, you need to have mentors that way. And so, yes, but I've never really had a person besides my eighth grade teacher that ever got me really inspired. And I, when I meet teachers, I tell them, look, my eighth grade teacher, Mr. Roberto, was not, I don't know if he was a good science teacher, I have no idea, but every Friday afternoon, if we were good all week, he'd tell these long, stupid jokes. And I mean long, and I mean stupid. I still know them, some of them. One's called Green Apes, one's called Tiz Bottle. I'm not going to tell them to you because you'll hate me. But I loved them. And so he would do them, and I'd say, oh, my word, I want to do that. That's what I want to do. And I noticed that he loved doing it. And even though he had probably done it dozens of times, it still seemed like he was saying it for the first time. Now, I never met him again. Another person I got to go say thank you to if I could. But that would be my person who really inspired me. And I believe I was in between sixth and eighth grade. I don't remember exactly which grade. Mr. Roberto, I remember him. I remember it was Friday afternoon if we were good. And I'd even, because I was like the class clown, I'd even tell everybody, man, shut up, shut up. We're going to have homework. Do you want homework or do you want him to tell that long, stupid joke? Right? So if I was to pick a mentor, you know, as a person that has influenced me, that would be Mr. Roberto. And hey, if you're out there, Mr. Roberto, thanks a lot, buddy. I loved Green Apes is the worst, best joke I ever heard. So there, that's it. But I still certainly read books about how to be comedic, how to speak. People who are good at what they do, which I would like to think I am, but I like to think I'm, like, say, braggingly, I'm the world's leading expert on making safety fun. Now I can say that with the history I have. I get books all the time on speaking and reading. I mean, not reading, speaking and being comedic and how to have fun. And I might read, you know, 30 pages and only find one thing I never heard before, but that's all right, right? That's that one thing. Professional golfers still have coaches that help them how to play golf, right?
Well, yeah, and I think coaching is great all your life. Do you have a good story from NASA? I'm so curious. I want to hear about NASA.
All right, you want to hear one? You're probably not supposed to hear it. They probably kept this a secret, kind
of. I thought in space you couldn't hear it.
Yeah, no, this was the one in Texas. Oh. I spoke at the one in Houston, the center there. I used to have an agent, and part of the deal was I got the talk. They have a featured speaker every year, and I was their featured speaker one year, and I was giving a talk on stress. But part of the deal was that I would get a private tour of the place. And the woman who hired me and Yvette and their marketing director or somebody like that, it was just three of us. And they both knew the site well. They worked there, right? So we're going around. I'm asking them a million questions. So we get to this pool. At the time, it was the largest volume pool in the world. Mm-hmm. It had a space station in there. Yeah. And the astronauts would practice, you know, because it's near weightlessness, right, in the water. Yep. And plus you have no oxygen, right? And we were up on a catwalk, like I was telling you about in the turbine deck, but this was at NASA. And I asked Yvette, I said, Yvette, can we go down? Because I'd like to go down. She goes, no, we're not allowed to go down anymore. I said, oh, okay. I said, well, you need security clearance? She goes, well, yeah, but she goes, you know why we're not allowed? I said, no. She goes, the guy who ran this years ago, who was in charge of the pool, and I'm sure they had dozens of people working there, right? Just for the pool. It was that big. And he said they went out one night. I don't know where they were drinking. I got a feeling they were with two other couples. And I could picture I don't know that I would do this, but I could picture it. He said, hey, you guys want to go skinny dipping in the largest pool in the world? Yes, I do. Right? I mean... You might say it's harmless fun. It's harmless fun if it's not in the NASA pool they used for the space station. It got caught.
Yeah.
And ever since then, you can't go down unless you get, you know, special security clearance. I couldn't just come as a visitor. That's a pretty good story, huh, Katie?
Yeah, that's a good story. That's a good story. Let's skinny dip in the NASA pool, the space pool. Yeah.
The other one was the little capsules they have, the capsule, like they have it there. I don't think it was a replica. I think it was actually the capsule, the Sputnik, I think it was called. That's so little, so small. Before they go, they would drink. The Russians would have, they would salute and have drinks before
vodka.
They go.
Vodka.
Vodka, yeah. I was like, whoa, that is, and the panel is right at your, we're talking inches away from your face.
Was that space, the thing they had to spin in, or is it they just had to get underwater in it?
This is the one that went out in space. This was the first capsule that Russia sent out.
Yuri Gagarin.
Oh, yeah. I know. So we're talking about that, and we're talking about having vodka before you get into G-forces.
Got in that, before the astronaut got in to go up into space. Yeah, because I was asking those kind of questions. I say, what's unusual about the Russians when they did this compared to you, our culture or other cultures even? And so that was one thing. I was like, everything. But I don't know if it led to any problems later. But I guess
not. I mean, if it's part of the culture and you have
to do a lot. You didn't do, well, that's another thing I learned. You didn't really do that much. You were kind of like just there to, like they do now with huge tractors that have GPS. The person sits in the tractor, doesn't do much, but they're there just in case. And they might try a couple things that they do, but there was a lot of little switches right in front of your face. I actually got choked up when I went there about midway through about how fantastic it was. And they still had the control center where they did Apollo 13, that movie. It's still there. They didn't change it. They don't use it. But they do it for tourists to come in and to see it. So I got to sit there, and I was there as long as I wanted, right? Because it was just the three of us having a tour. But yeah, that was a fabulous experience there. And but the talk I gave was about stress. But people came up. We did this balloon thing. I made it so much fun. And the balloon thing was to show how stress, you get too much stress, you pop, not enough, and you look like a little sad balloon. That was why I used the balloon. I went to India. And I just blogged about this. And not India, I'm sorry, Dubai. I went to India too, but I went to Dubai. They're very reserved compared to our culture, right? Very gracious folks. I ended up getting a friend who took me to his house. It was a wonderful experience. The talk they wanted me to give, which I gave, was great leaders make safety fun. It was about, now I have other talks that are like create a vibrant safety culture. I even have talks I give on root cause analysis because I worked for IMPO for a while, studying accidents at nuclear power plants, right? That's the Institute of Nuclear Power Operations. They help prevent the nuclear power plants from messing up. So they wanted that. So it's universal everywhere you go.
Dubai wants to be one of the first countries to focus on wellness and well-being.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. For like their general population and safety and whatever?
Yep.
Oh, I never heard. Oh, my word. Oh, that's great. Well, they have a pretty progressive, their sheik. I don't know what he's the person who runs. Because when I was there, I can't tell you his name now either. But he is very progressive with the country. That's why they have such tourism. And he's doing that as a big one, not just oil. And I can picture that they would do that, that make wellness. I will definitely put that on my to-do list of research that, Katie.
Yes.
Very important. Okay. So I know we've talked about different stuff that you're involved in and planning to do, but let's sum up. If somebody wants to get a hold of you, how can they do that?
Oh, yes. Richard@makesafetyfun is my email address. Richard@makesafetyfun. Get to any time. My website is makesafetyfun.com. So that's pretty easy to remember. And there's contact information there and all the. Now, I've done so many different projects, although I've been getting better. Even this, I told myself, look, you got to brag about yourself some. I have a very difficult time doing that. Not because I don't have bad self-esteem, nothing like that. It's just, I don't know. It's not me naturally. Well, and a bunch of other speakers will, and they should. I'm not putting them down for it at all. But now I have to start because COVID, I have to do it more. So I have helped companies have the most outrageously wonderful projects. BP, it can happen to me. It happened today. It was up for the Helios Award, a video for it, fun as anything. So I won passion project I did for dredging companies. So I've done all kinds of projects. A company, hire me. If you get in touch with me and say, look, our safety culture, our safety program is dull, is boring. We want you to help us. Our culture is a mess. I've gone out and helped companies out in the Midwest, coal companies, where they had horrible cultures. And they have me come in, inject me in there for a few weeks, and it changes. Now, sometimes it's painful, but sometimes it's because there's people in there, and I'll give a report. I won't give names, but I'll say, look, you have this problem with this. And I've been, the companies that hire me often are the ones that already have a great safety program. Firmenich. Oh, they make the little stuff that's in, it's a French company that makes the stuff you put into mints, you know, little green dots and stuff. Yeah. Most wonderful safety program in the world. They had one, it was out in Anaheim, California. They hired me too. As you and I know, the people who are good at what they do are the ones that want to know more. People who aren't that good at what they do think they already are good at what they do, right? And same thing there. I said, you guys have a great culture. All right, well, how can we be better?
Yeah.
So that's what I like. I love doing that. Helping companies with projects, coming up with cool titles like this one. I didn't come up with this one though. The one for, which I told him, I said, this is the best. The one for the Circus of Safety. Yeah, Circus of Safety. So that's how Richard.
I want to see a safety seminar for clowns. You know, I want to see proper use of the seltzer bottle.
Right. Well, I'm sure there's clowns. I'm sure when you go to clown school, you have to. Same thing with I read about Cirque du Soleil. About they really don't have that many injuries. It's more dangerous to be a football player. But when you first learn, when you're new, it's still not as dangerous as football. But when you're new in that, there's a lot of the injuries aren't from the performers. They're the state, like folks like you are, stagehands. One of the fatalities was, I don't remember what trade he was, but he got hit in the head with something behind backstage and it killed him, right? Which is typical of, it could be typical of any site, right? Doesn't mean that it's a dangerous site. And same thing, safety's got to be part of that.
Yeah. So let me ask you a question about, for the casual reader here, who's trying to wrap their head around is, how do I make safety fun? Okay, so how does making safety fun make a difference on Thursday? I mean, a typical work week, what do you want someone to, who's maybe been to one of your seminars, read some of your articles in the Safety and Health magazine, what do you want them to remember on Thursday?
Well, I'll tell you what was done when I did this when I was just in the demolition. There's a great example where I was there for over a year and a half. And every third, I swear this is true. I'm making this up. We had four tens we worked, and we called them jumps. You'd go into the plant for a couple hours, come out. That was one jump. And you'd stay out for a little while, a half hour, hour or so. And you'd go another jump. You had three jumps a day. The team did, the group did. Thursday afternoon was our last jump. And then we had 3 days off. So I'd go out early to where the plant was. It was called the New Rad Waste Building. And I would go on this side of the fence most of the time because you weren't supposed to be in that side of the fence and put stuff in your mouth or do stuff, but I could still see me. And sometimes I go on this side and I would do something different every Thursday at our last jump. I bring my ukulele in and say, it's our last jump. It's our last jump. Or my harmonica. I flew a kite one time, blew bubbles every Thursday at our last jump. Before they went in, I pepped everybody up, did some goofy stuff to say, this is our last jump. We got 3 days off, so that would be an example. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you what, when I eventually stopped it because our crew kind of broke up and people weren't going in there as much. And it wasn't just, I did it for weeks though. I mean, I did it probably for 15, 20 weeks, In fact, part of the problem is I go to dollar stores and go places like, what can I do this week? I got to think, because I never did two of the same things. I'd bring in my guitar at times, I'd bring in different stuff, horns and, all kinds of things that I would do. So there you go. Now, not everybody can do that, but if you have on a Thursday that you're going to Thursday morning at your early pre-job briefing, we did it on Wednesday, by the way, here, which my boss was the most wonderful man in the world. We would have some type of contest or test or something that had to do with work too. And you'd win like a gift card or like one time I had everybody, I'd give them a safety slogan or safety about the topic. Whoever said it most dramatically, they would get like a $25 gift card to a Wawa, right? To a store. We did that every Wednesday. We didn't do it Thursday, but you could have done it Thursday, right? We did it every Wednesday morning. And we did some crazy stuff. Didn't interrupt work whatsoever. You know, we 6 to 6:30, we had our morning meeting where we talk about safety, what we're going to do that day, what kind of radioactivity we're having in different places. And always on Wednesday, we included about 10 minutes of this that I just mentioned. What a difference it made. I mean, and I got everybody to stretch every morning, so that was a hard sell, but I finally got it. Everybody in the group stretched. I'd play music with this little speaker that was cool. I'd put a funny saying up, or always give 100% unless you're giving blood. And inspiring ones. And then I started putting like short lyrics on the whiteboard for songs and to see who can know what song that is. You know, that type of stuff is vital. Not vital. It's wonderful to inspire a better, more cohesive culture. And it's a serious business. I didn't go out in the field when I was doing surveys or doing stuff and act goofy so that it would impact the job. I would never. Well, you wouldn't do that, Katie, on a forklift, right? I mean, you might smile at people, wave at them, or, you know, maybe stick your tongue out, right? But you're not going to go. And like, I had a guy do this, and I really got on his case. He was like, he was good on the forklift, but he was spinning it around and making it go like this. I came over to him. I said, do not ever let me see you ever do that again, ever, ever. I said, I don't care. I said, I'm impressed that you could do it. Don't ever do it. So, and he knew I was being serious too. So, you know, I'm not saying you can be clowning around too much, but you can clown around.
Clown around, but not with machinery. Yeah. So if you had one last sort of important statement, let's talk. You have a podcast coming out soon.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. It's going to be called Safety Stuff. It'll be superb. I promise. I'm putting my heart and everything into it. And I know when people listen to it, especially if you are involved in safety in any way, you are not going to leave an episode without two things: having smiled or laughed and thought about that goofy hawk. And you're going to learn things that are going to help you be better presenting. You're going to be a safety presenter superstar. Your safety meetings are going to be better. And so are your safety programs. Even things like your procedures, things like how you send out communications to your employees, what to do when you have employees who are disobeying. You know, you're going to learn that too. So you're never going to leave an episode where you didn't learn something you can use on the job, but you're also going to see mostly 70%. It's going to be just fun and unusual. Did you know that pistachios can combust, spontaneously combust?
Nope.
Well, you're going to have to listen to my podcast for me to explain that to you.
Nice. So if you had one more, like one tidbit of chunk of valuable, super important information, the last word, what would it be?
Touch your employees, touch people's emotion. That's the most important thing in the safety and health in every field, is to positively touch people's emotions, because emotion means energy that drives motion.
Beautiful. Jim Bob, anything else?
I just want to thank you, Richard.
You're welcome. This was so much
again,
fun.
I am, big fan of you since the 90s, right? Just followed your work as a chemical industry professional. Keep doing it.
Right? I will. It's a challenge now for me, more than, because there's, so much information, so much stuff out there. I'm sure even like you're trying to get people to watch your TikTok or to watch your YouTube, because there's so much. You got to really be good.
So, hey, Jim Bob, who did you work for?
Yeah, so I wanted to ask you.
I worked for the Union Carbide Corporation.
Oh, Union Carbide.
And the Dow Chemical Company. Yeah.
Dow Chemical?
Yes.
Oh, yes, I've given talks for both. Where was your Dow at the Dow one? Where was it?
Well, I was located for both Union Carbide and Dow. I was located in South Charleston, West Virginia, and I was an internal consultant on wastewater treatment, solid and hazardous waste. Also did some compliance auditing, some advocacy with government agencies. I visited all the plants in the Gulf Coast and other locations too. Yeah, but
cool.
West Virginia was my home. It still is my home. So.
And now are you doing this mostly?
Yes, I retired and decided to devote myself to the process of applied humor.
Oh, That's wonderful. That's great. Well, thanks, guys. This was fun. I had a great time. Thanks. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome. Bye.
Bye.
This has been Laughbox, the official podcast of the Association for Applied and Therapeutic Humor. And we'd like to thank our guest, safety speaker Richard Hawk. I'm Jim Bob Williams.
And I'm Katie B.
Thank you for joining us for episode 122 with Jim Bob Williams, Katie B, and Richard Hawk. Thank you very much.
Laughbox is a production of the Association for Applied and Therapeutic Humor. Visit us online at www.aath.org. Follow us on social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or LinkedIn. Music by Gary Rubio. For more information, www.garyrubiomusic.com.